Welcome to Tim Bray's Ongoing podcast, which is an audio version of a selection of the articles on my blog, also called Ongoing. I'm Tim Bray. You can find the blog at tbray.org. This is pretty well the same story you'd experience by reading it, but some people would rather listen. This article was published on the 1st of May, 2021, and is entitled Long Links. Welcome once again to Long Links, a monthly curation of long-form pieces that pleased and educated me, and that being semi-retired gives me time to enjoy. Offered in the hope that one or two might enrich the lives of busier people. It's simple and accurate to say that Xi Jinping's regime is barbaric, obscurantist, and brutal, and that the people of China are badly misgoverned. That given, the place is interesting. I, for one, am continuously astonished that they managed to hold it all together. Maria Repnikova on How China Tells Its Story dives deep on this, on the very gray line between what can and can't be said, and what Chinese propagandists think it is they're trying to do, and especially the differences between the Chinese and Russian approaches to storytelling. Scale Was the God That Failed is by Josh Marshall, founder and editor of Talking Points Memo, a rare example of an all-digital publication that grew out of a blog and has become a sustainable business. It's not actually long form, measured by a number of words, but contains more intellectual meat on the subject of internet publishing than you can find in a dozen typical discourses on the subject. Read this if you want to learn why internet advertising is so awful, why your local paper went out of business, and why it's not being replaced by high-profile web publishers who, these days, are mostly in the news for yet another round of journalist layoffs. Here are a couple of sound bites. Historically, newspapers and TV and radio stations enjoyed local monopolies. Thus, almost all the elements of good newspaper journalism, big newsrooms paying middle-class salaries and giving reporters the time to get the story right, were made possible by those monopolies. Also, the chronic oversupply of publications chasing a fixed number of ad dollars has required publishers to continually charge less for ads that demand more of readers. Anyhow, investment-driven big journal launches have pretty well all failed. Marshall offers several examples of things that have worked, including his own publication, but there's still a crisis in journalism, which is really bad for democracy. The Healing Power of JavaScript, by well-known writer, photographer, and techie Craig Maude, is probably only for geeks. It's about the way that coding can be a morale booster, particularly in depressive plague times. I found it heartwarming. Consider this. With static sites, we've come full circle, like exhausted poets who have traveled the world trying every form of poetry and realizing that the haiku is enough to see us through most of our tragedies. Regular readers will know that I'm an audiophile. I used to really enjoy advising people on buying and setting up good-sounding stereo gear, but that seems to happen less these days. Still, judging by the intense traffic at my local record store, there are a lot of people listening to vinyl. I'm not a fanatic, listen mostly to digital music, but still find the experience of listening to vinyl entrancing. I really liked How to Buy the Best Record Player and Stereo System for Any Budget in Pitchfork magazine. I haven't heard a lot of the stuff they recommend, but here's the advice I've often given to non-obsessive people who want good sound at a fair price. Decide how much you want to spend. Go buy speakers from PSB, amplification from NAD, and a record player from Rega that fit in your budget. They all have large product lines with entries at all the same price points. You'll be happy. But don't buy a Rega cartridge. Having said that, Mark Hogan, who wrote the Pitchfork piece, probably has fresher data. Moving from Pitchfork to Discogs.com, here are the 50 most popular live albums of all time and the 200 best albums of the 2010s. I like the methodology. Discogs has as much claim to know what music people like as any organization in the world. As an audiophile and a music lover, I have a soft spot for live recordings. A band on stage has more adrenaline in its veins than any studio can generate, and there's less production interference between the music and you. Of the 50 mentioned here, I own 15. As for the music of the teens, I have only 7, because my taste these days has become less mainstream, because what, in this century, are albums anyhow, and because I'm an out-of-touch old fart. Here's another one that's probably geek only. The Tech Tune-Up of 2021 by Donald Knuth. Tech these days is pretty well only used for scientific publishing and in just a few science neighborhoods, but it's wonderful that a piece of software that's so old and, to be honest, so old-fashioned is still lovingly maintained. Knuth thinks this may be the last refresh. This is only 3 minutes and 54 seconds long and is not really a video, just panning and zooming around a photo of the moon. But wow, the photo is taken with a Leica APO Telit-R 2.8 400mm lens, of which only 390 were ever made starting back in the 90s. As I write, you can get one on eBay for $13,999. Might even be worth it. Speaking of fine photographs captured with unconventional technology, take a tour through Interview, David D. Delgado's love letter to New York City, shot on 4x5 film. What beautiful colors. To quote Delgado, self-described as a Puerto Rican independent photographer based in New York City, this whole project was shot on a Toyo 45A, which is a 4x5 field camera. It's not a light camera, it's a heavy camera. Lugging that camera along with the film, film holders, and a dark cloth is not an easy task. Shooting 4x5 is a lot slower, especially when you're using a field camera. It slows things down and lets you connect. Well, it sure connected with me. Now let's enter more dangerous territory with the sexual identity that emerged on TikTok. On the surface, it's about what might or might not be a segment of the gender sexual spectrum, super straight. On the other hand, it might be ignorant hatefulness. Whatever you may think on that issue, I found Connor Friedersdorf's exploration of the conversation fascinating. As if discussing the issues aren't difficult enough, he broadens his scope to include a broader survey of internet conversation and stays humane in the face of inhumanity. Anyhow, educational and thought-provoking, even if you're outraged. The Ever Given is still stuck, legally now, in the Suez Canal, but it's not news anymore. I think it still has stories to tell, though, and offer in evidence gargantuanization by John Lanchester in the LRB. Lanchester is a very good writer, and his first-person experience has first-person experience with problems in the canal. He has plenty to teach about what the Ever Given means and what trends it exemplifies. The story starts with a question. Have you ever thought about what ship might have brought whatever's in the package that Amazon just delivered to you across whatever ocean needed crossing? Does anyone? This is a large and pretty well invisible segment of the economy. It'll be less invisible if you read this. These days, I hear less talk about God from politicians, even in America, where such talk not used to be not only commonplace, but nearly compulsory. It's not hard to figure out why. Americans are less religious. 538 does the numbers in It's Not Just Young White Liberals Who Are Leaving Religion. I'm not sure why this is surprising in a world where supernatural events are not observed and prayers aren't answered, but it changes a lot of societal dynamics and needs to be talked over. From the Healthcare Blog, America's Health in the 2016 Election, An Unexpected Connection. The piece isn't that long, but I include it because of the graph at the top entitled Vitality and the Vote. It is astonishingly information-dense, the kind of thing that features in the books of Edward Tufte. Looking at it, I observe the following. 1. The graph measures not vote distribution by geography, but its first derivative, vote movement. 2. There is more geography in the South and Midwest than in the West and Northeast. 3. Midwestern Americans are remarkably less healthy than those to their East and West, with the Southerners in between. 4. And this is the headline. Healthier people swung progressive, unhealthy ones to Trump. Obviously, there's a correlation here with age. I wish there was a mouse over, so I could ask about anomalously outlying counties. The accompanying text is competent and useful, but wow, that graph. I don't know much about Alex Stephan, but his climate crisis coverage has impressed me. The Last Hurrah from his Substack asks what a climate radical, like me, should think of Joe Biden's progress thus far. Despite the obvious fact that Biden's program is woefully inadequate in the face of onrushing disaster, Stephan finds grounds for optimism, which is something that we can all use some of these days. Now here's a high-impact story. Microsoft is going to change the default font in Windows from the current and reasonably okay Calibri. Many people, as in billions, are going to spend a lot of time looking at screens full of this stuff, so the future of humanity is significantly affected. Thanks to Scott Hanselman for posting a small sample. That's a link. My response, we can rule out Seaford for its absurd right single quote, Skeena swoosh looks swoosh like it's sponsored by Nike, something in Grandview makes the kerning hurt, Bierstadt wins for me because the characters snuggle up against each other with a little more flow. Finally, you want long form? Dive into How the Pentagon Started Taking UFOs Seriously, which is a monster, and never not interesting. And no, you probably don't have to take UFOs seriously, even if you enjoy reading a few thousand words about those who do, which you probably will. I mean, enjoy reading them, not taking it seriously. That's all, folks.